are you with Truth News Radio, coming to you on the 15th of January, 2014. Welcome to another year, ladies and gentlemen. It's great to be bringing you the show again. And I'm looking forward to a whole year of incredible information. And I've got so much to talk about. I've got so many things lined up. I've got so much boiling in my head that it is going to be really difficult to contain it and control it. There's, at the moment, you know, we're sort of going through a period of time where there's an incredible sort of intersection of thoughts and expanding consciousness on so many different topics. And, you know, what we're trying to do on this show is to sort of capture as much of that as we can, to document it, to record it, and it's often for the future. It's so that people can actually refer back to where we were at certain points of time. It's also for the present. It's also to inform you about what we know. But what we're doing at the moment, I believe, has incredible importance also for the entire future of humanity, because we are documenting the state of our knowledge. We're questioning the status quo, and we're trying to do it in a way that is as rigorous as possible, for people to understand that this is a serious endeavor. You know, it's not simply about entertainment. It's not simply about trying to get you interested in some crazy new subject. I spend a lot of time trying to decide what's important and what isn't important. And that's actually quite a difficult task, because there is so much that you could talk about. You know, if you just take the range of the spectrum of things, from like pure gossip of you know, Hollywood and entertainment rubbish, to, you know, talking about what the royal family is doing, to talking about what's going on at the superficial level of politics, which is what the media is mainly concerned with. And then you go through the various questions that we have about the fringes of that, into questions that we've considered many, many times on this show, about geopolitics, about the various wars that are going on, about sciences, about what is factual and what is not factual in so many different areas of science and politics. But then we get out to the fringes of that, and there are a lot more subjects then which are there to be looked at. And one of them, which we've considered on this show a number of times, is the questions about space travel, the questions about traveling to other planets, human beings particularly. Can we go to the moon? Have we been to the moon? Can we go to Mars? And this is one where we get into some really serious questions, and some really serious questions about what is scientifically feasible, what has been proven, and what we have evidence for. And it's a subject that I find incredibly fascinating. It's a subject that I really do become quite absorbed in, because it really does have a lot of unresolved issues for me. And let me just focus again on the questions here about space travel. There are questions about evidence that that human beings have already been outside the very close orbit of the Earth, evidence or scientific information that would suggest that that is either possible or not possible. And those are two very, very important questions to look at, because at the moment, what I can assure you is that many people, many scientists, many governments are now looking at the very, very serious question of space travel. I mean, for a long time, it wasn't really talked about much. We had the Apollo missions of the 60s and early 70s as sort of standing there as some sort of icon of American achievement, and then wasn't even discussed. But now we've got the Chinese sending a mission to the moon. We've got a lot of talk about sending manned missions to Mars. And the questions about whether it's possible to go to the moon are coming to the fore again, and a lot of the evidence that's coming through, even from very, very respected, very, very mainstream sources, say it's actually incredibly difficult to get humans to the moon. And they're talking about incredible problems that haven't been resolved yet about things like radiation. And it's bizarre because this is all in the context of our historical narrative, and it's something that I grew up with, which was being told that, those guys, those Apollo guys went there all this time ago, and that they didn't just go there once, they went there over and over again, and they had this, you know, incredible program of lunar exploration, which it seems like we have no benefit from that. After 40 years, we're starting again almost from scratch. And to me, just as someone with a basic training in high school science, I'm not a scientist, right? But I did go to university and I did do a degree and I did do some, you know, rigorous training in terms of the way my thought processes work. To me, there is a big problem with the narrative of human interactions in space. There's inconsistencies there in terms of what we've been told, in terms of what we apparently know now, in terms of what we apparently don't know. So tonight's show, folks, is going to be a whole show about the moon. And I have, as my guests, I've got Damon Crowe, who's been on this show a number of times before, who's here with me, and I'm here with Damon in his own studios here. And I have on the line Jarra White, who will be joining us for a full discussion in the second hour of the show. It's going to be a tour de force tonight about the questions about the moon, focusing very, very largely on some scientific technical problems about getting human beings into space, dealing with the radiation belts, dealing with the solar radiation, dealing with the intergalactic radiation. So apologies there for that long, rambling, and maybe pointless introduction, Damon. I'd like you to now, basically kick the ball into the field.
Okay. Well, we spoke about this topic a little over a year ago, and I mentioned at the time that I didn't believe we went to the moon because of radiation. I believe there is only one primary issue to focus on, and the technical challenge for Apollo was not ballistic or whether we could get there or back. It was the issue of the cargo, and the cargo was a human being, and you cannot get a human being into space, and that is a mathematical, scientific fact. I knew that then. However, I've spent an inordinate amount of time in the last 12 months validating my mathematics and my science, and I can tell you with my hand on the heart, it is a mathematical fact that we didn't go there, and I hope to achieve that summation in the short time that we have. But we don't need to focus on photographic evidence. We don't need to focus on flag waving or craters left by the rocket, the lunar lander that landed on the moon. We only need to focus on radiation. And let me just start that after World War II, the primary goal of the powers to be was to get humans into space. You'll see a mad rush by the Russian and the American German scientists. Let's face it, they were Nazi scientists that went to Russia and to America. Von Braun were headed up the space program for NASA for the Americans, and the Russians were way more advanced than the Americans. And in 1957, Dr. Van Allen found that they could not send anybody to the moon. He realized that the radiation in the belts was insurmountable. Now, he openly came back and believed that we did go to the moon, so let me just preference that. But he found that the radiation in the radiation belts was significantly more than they'd anticipated. In fact, the Geiger counters that Dr. Van Allen had stopped working on Explorer 1 in 1957. He then set up Explorer 2. That didn't make it. Explorer 3 came back, and it was encased in lead, and it stopped working. Now, there's some conjecture about how much radiation they found, but we're looking at a minimum of 100 rem, but 100 rem per hour, and I'll talk about that a little bit later, but we can talk about multiples of the radiation on Earth as a starting point. But they sent up an instrument that saturated its instrumentation back in 57, and they knew at that time that they would have to develop, the number one challenge was to develop shielding that could protect them to get to the moon. And I've got the 1963 Russian radiation document, which is the first real document that was produced on the radiation. It's a very interesting document to have a look at. And we've also got the 1966 revised version of that by NASA. And then we've got numerous radiation documents. In fact, in the office here, I think, Harold, you can validate, we're sitting here with hundreds and hundreds of pages of radiation documents that I've documented and gone through and validated. And the bottom line is the Geiger counters that were woven into the spacesuits of the Apollo astronauts categorically, quantifiably proved they never left low Earth orbit. We know that because if we take, say, the Apollo 11 mission, they absorb 0.18 rem. Now, I won't go into a lot of detail about what these measurements all mean. Rem is just essentially the unit of measurement of radiation, particularly on the skin, when it hits the skin. There's all forms of radiation, of course, gamma and X radiation and zeta particles and all that sort of stuff. But we're just talking about radiation hitting the skin. And to give you some understanding, 5 rem per year is the maximum amount of radiation that a radiation worker can absorb in a year. We also know at low Earth orbit that they actually absorb more radiation than what the Apollo astronauts receive. So the Apollo astronauts on their Geiger counters, woven into their suit in a lightly shielded craft, in a craft that had 7 grams per centimeter squared of maximum shielding. The majority of the craft, the conical shaped craft, was 2 grams per centimeter squared. But if we take uniform shielding of 7-8 grams per centimeter squared across the entire craft, which is very conservative, that's half the shielding of the International Space Station at 15 grams per centimeter squared. Now, in low Earth orbit, the International Space Station at some 400 kilometers off the deck receives a multiple of something like 38 times Earth's radiation. So on Earth, you receive something like 60 microrems per hour. Now, on the Apollo mission, they received a multiple of Earth radiation of around 15, 16.
Thanks, Damon. We will continue this after the break. You're with Truth News Radio Australia. And we are talking about Apollo. We're talking about moon missions. We're talking about scientific possibility and plausibility and the radiation belts. Do stay with us. Are you getting fed up with all the disinformation, deception, spin, propaganda, half-truths and downright lies in mainstream news? Looking for something different? Visit Truth News Radio Australia, www.truthnews.com.au, and may the truth set you free. Welcome back. You're with Truth News Radio. I've got my guest here tonight, Damon Crowe, who's really done a fantastic amount of research into questions about the viability and technical issues associated with taking human beings outside of the very, very narrow orbit of the Earth, which we know has been done many, many times. We've seen a lot of astronauts. We know that people have gone to low orbit. But the question about whether human beings or mammals generally can go beyond that is one which, believe it or not, is not as clear-cut as you may think. Of course, everyone knows in their mind, they think, well, the Apollo missions, right? But there hasn't been anything for decades since then. There aren't even any animal experiments we can refer to. So regardless of whether or not you are a full believer in the Apollo missions, the status of the science, the status of the technology as we know it today suggests that there is a big problem with sending people out there, and even the experts are saying we haven't solved that problem. This, of course, leads us to then question about whether we were really told the truth about the Apollo missions, and your mind starts boiling away. You can't help not questioning it. You just can't help it. And this is what, Damon, you've done. Your mind has boiled away, and you've just done this research because you were driven to it, weren't you?
It's just an independent curiosity that it was driving me crazy. I wanted to get to the bottom of it. I wanted to quantifiably know whether we went there or not. And the number one technical challenge was radiation for human beings. You can, by the way, send reptiles into space. The only known animal that has ever gone into space and come back, when I say space, I'm talking about past the Van Allen radiation belts, low Earth orbit. Some may describe that as space. Maybe Jarrah might be able to clarify whether that is or not. To me, open space is outside our Van Allen radiation belts, which go out 7-8 Earth radii. You're going out in the area of 60, 70, 80,000 kilometers. We're talking about an electric fence of 100 million electron volts or more. We have little understanding of it. There are probes that were recently, two probes, in fact, brought back up there recently by NASA, who were essentially openly admitting they didn't really understand the Valen radiation belts. They also sent probes to the moon and were measuring radiation up there. And in their quotes, whilst not coming back with very hard mathematical figures, they did indicate that the Valen radiation belts are much more volatile than they originally thought. They also indicated that the intensity of the belts could be increased by 100, even 1,000 times in a fraction of a second on a knife's edge, and they didn't know why that was. They knew the sun was related to it, but they couldn't quite tie that together. So there is no, on the public record, experiment involving a mammal similar to a human being, going through the radiation belts and back. Now, that is a stunning finding. So what we have is in 57, Dr. Van Allen finding that the radiation belts are extremely dangerous, to the point that both his Geiger counters on Explorer 1 and Explorer 3, Jarrah might correct this, but my understanding is Explorer 1 and 3, both the Geiger counters were saturated to the point they stopped working. On Explorer 2, I believe that was a failed mission. They didn't get into the radiation belts. And on Explorer 3, they encased the Geiger counter in lead, and it reached maximum saturation. The other interesting thing about this, and Jarrah's done an excellent overview of this, is the secondary radiation, when you use aluminium as a shielding, poses a bigger threat than the original radiation. In fact, Jarrah on one of his videos shows that with 100 million electron volts, when that energized particle interacts with alloy as a shielding, which is what they were using, the secondary emission is 1,360 rem per hour using a mathematical formula, Bergstrom, or I'm sure I'm not pronouncing that correctly. Jarrah will correct me on that. Now, 1,360 rem per hour will kill you. Now, they do believe that you can live with radiation, single radiation doses of 100, maybe even 300 rem, but a radiation worker is not allowed more than 5 rem in 1 year. In fact, I've seen documents 10 years ago that was half a rem a year. So if you have a look at something like Fukushima or Chernobyl, you're getting In Chernobyl, you're getting an increase in, well, let's say Fukushima. That's, you're getting 180 rem per hour. That's 3 million times the background radiation of Earth. That is very, very dangerous. You will not find any worker able to go in there and survive that sort of environment. Now, we're talking low Earth orbit, which is 400 kilometres. The Valen radiation belts commence at around 1,000 kilometres, although a little bit lower in the area of the South Atlantic anomaly. And they're receiving 38 times the radiation of Earth, with shielding twice the thickness of the Apollo. So, Harold, if you and I blasted from the Earth and I got off at the International Space Station in twice the shielding, under the comfort of being on this side of the Van Allen radiation belts, and then you then transcended the Van Allen radiation belts, which would take a number of hours, even if the craft was travelling at 20,000 kilometres an hour on an ever-increasing ecliptic orbit, it would take you a number of hours to get through that. You would then have a three-day trip to the moon. Now, we now know from the Mars mission, NASA is letting out little pieces at a time. Now, this information should have been presented in the 60s, but it's been a huge cover-up on radiation, and only small parts of the puzzle being released on a year-by-year basis. But 50 years on, nearly, we're starting to put together the jigsaw puzzle. The trip to Mars, and you can Google this and find this in mainstream article, and then there's a very good document written on the Mars mission by Donald Rapp, which I spoke to again this morning to confirm some of his findings. And they're indicating 0.2 rem a day with 20 grams per centimetre squared of shielding. Now, that indicates in one day in space, travelling from Earth to the Moon, leaving out the Van Allen radiation belts, you were to receive the total dose of an eight-day mission. In fact, significantly more, because 20 grams per centimetre squared is it's approximately three times the shielding we had on Apollo. Now, remember, the shielding on Apollo was around 7 grams to 8 grams per centimetre squared on the hull, but the majority of the craft was only 2 grams per centimetre squared. So it's pure mathematics. It's a fairly linear equation from around 1 gram per centimetre squared to 20, 30 grams per centimetre squared. Now, on the radiation document that we have from Russia in 1963, which is one of the first radiation documents that were ever put together, it's a 500-page document, it indicates that you needed a craft of 110 grams per centimetre squared. That would have weighed about 500 tonnes, an impossible payload, to stay under one rem in 1 hour in the radiation belts. So even in a craft of 500 tonnes, you would, according to that document, have achieved at least three rems. Now, that is multiples of 10, 100 times more in just 1 or 2 hours than what they achieved in the entire mission. But let's leave out the radiation belts. In space, one day in space would achieve three times more than what the entire eight-day mission. Now, there is no evidence that you can walk around on the moon in a spacesuit with only 0.25 grams per centimetre squared. That is 1/4,000th of the shielding on Earth. Now, on Earth, you are under the equivalent of 10 metres of water. That, if we're using the denominations of grams per centimetre squared, is 1,000 grams per centimetre squared. So you've got 1/4,000th of the shielding when you're walking around on the moon. Now, remember, in Apollo 11, they were on the lunar surface with literally no shielding, other than the lunar lander, which had literally no shielding, for 20 hours.
We're just going to break. Damon, you are just doing an incredible job there going through this information. I hope that our audience is able to take it in. I know it's pretty intense. We'll try and back this up with more detail during the show. We're going to break. We'll be right back. Hi, welcome back. You're listening to Truth News Radio Australia. It's a great pleasure to be bringing you this show today. And if you're listening to us on the FM radio there in Austin, Texas, I hope you're having a lovely January. I hope your Christmas was good. I hope your New Year was good. And our show goes out every week on the Logos Network, and you can find our podcasts at www.truthnews.com.au. And we look forward to hearing your comments. The show is not currently a live show due to some technical problems, but we hope to be getting it back to a live status soon. Today I'm talking to my guest Damon Crow about the questions and difficulties with space travel, and particularly the questions about radiation. So, Damon, just before the break there, you were basically talking about the problems with shielding and that there is really no evidence that the shielding that the Apollo mission used would have been adequate.
Yeah, so the information that we do have proves quantifiably we didn't go, because we now know what the radiation is in low Earth orbit, on the International Space Station, on the Mir space station. We now know from the satellite data that we've got through the radiation belts, recent trips to Mars, the Indian Chandrayaan mission to the moon. And all the results we get back from all those indicate that the craft never left the low Earth orbit, because the dosimeters woven into the suits indicate such a low level of radiation. We're talking only 16 times the radiation of Earth. Now, you get more radiation than that at the International Space Station at low Earth orbit with twice the shielding. We now know in space you should be getting hundreds of times the radiation of Earth. And we know now in a spacesuit in low Earth orbit, you're getting something in the order of 2,000 times the background radiation of Earth. Now, we know the radiation in the radiation belts is millions of times more than Earth, and we have a bigger problem, which is the secondary emissions caused when those highly energized particles hit shielding such as aluminium, which is light, lighter than water, for instance. But water is a far better protector of secondary emissions. But unfortunately, the weight of water to go into the Vivalum radiation belts was too heavy a payload. So we now know, when we collect all this information, it take me too long to go into the detail that I've got here. We're talking hundreds of pages of collected information. But we now know, using common sense, that there's no way you could go through the Vallana radiation belts, which goes out for 60, 80,000 kilometres, 3 days into space, stay on the lunar surface for 20-odd hours. In fact, in Apollo 15, it was 60-odd hours. And come back through the intense, unpredictable Vallana radiation belts. And remember, these radiation belts are not constant. They change and move all the time, and land back on Earth. There is no recorded practical experiment using any animal other than a tortoise, which the Russians did, of any animal going through the radiation belts and to the moon and back, or even going into space and back. In fact, there is a litany of endless animals dying. In fact, Russia just recently sent up a flight containing gerbils and geckos and rats. And they did not go into the radiation belts. They approached the radiation belts on a 30-day trip. All the animals died, bar reptiles. Reptiles seem to be more robust, impervious to radiation compared to humans. Humans are very delicate. We don't, if you look at 5 rem per year for a radiation worker, that works out, at a very small multiple on Earth's radiation over the years, as something like an order of 10 or 13 times the background radiation of Earth. As soon as you start talking about 100 times or 1,000 times the background radiation of Earth, you're introducing serious problems for humans. Now, we are a fairly delicate animal, and we just do not have the shielding to get us into space. And we know now, mathematically, quantifiably, we would not have lasted 1 day in space. with a craft with three times or even more shielding than Apollo and recorded these innocuous figures. These figures of the Geiger counters are not focused on, but in fact they're the smoking gun. They are the smoking gun because they're woven into the suits and they quantifiably tell you they never left low Earth orbit. They never left there. We know this for a mathematical fact. No one can dispute these figures. I think when Jarrah gets on, who has been in this game a lot longer than I am and is more knowledgeable on this subject than I am, I don't think he's ever seen any evidence refute this. Another interesting tidbit as we go along the way on this is that they can't get film to operate at low Earth orbit. I have another document here that indicates that you cannot use normal film at low Earth orbit. I can give you, I can post all this information on your website and use these reference documents. But even in, some people may have seen the recent film in those IMAX type cinemas, that film was encased in water. The film that went to the moon has no imperfections on it at all. It traversed the Velen radiation belts, went into space and onto the lunar surface for 20 odd hours with little or no protection. There's not a single blemish, and we now know as little as 5 rems, or even in low Earth orbit, normal film, which it was, Kodak film, is seriously impacted, ghosted. In fact, at 5 rem, you can barely see anything at all. Now, you would have received more than 5 rem going through the radiation belts. The Chandrayaan mission to the moon, 73 hours, accumulated 130 rem, right? We're talking about hundreds of times, thousands of times the radiation of Earth. You cannot take film up there. And the film was unprotected. It was in a normal Hasselblad camera, and the film is perfect.
Can I just interject with something, Damon, which I want you to comment on, because this is something that often comes up, and you've been engaged in a lot of debates with debunkers of the Apollo conspiracy theories, and you're very familiar with this. But what people often say at, about this point in the debate is they'll say, come on, Damon, you know, get a grip on yourself. We know that people have been to the moon. We already know, therefore it must be possible. And then they say, well, you say, well, how do you know? Well, they say, well, we know because A, Apollo, NASA says we went there. B, the whole scientific community says we went there. The government says we went there. And we've got photographs and video that show we went there, so it must be possible. I mean, you've come across this style of argument before. How do you address it?
I just stick to the mathematics. All this other stuff is superfluous because they can't get their head around the fact we didn't go. My father literally hangs up on me when I talk about we didn't go to the moon, because their belief system just refuses to get their head around it. I just stick to the mathematics. You cannot get to the moon and back and accumulate the same level of radiation as a craft that's sitting in low Earth orbit with double or more the shielding than what you had. It's impossible. It's mathematically impossible. And there is no evidence of any animal, other than a reptile, let's say a mammal, ever going into space and coming back. None. None in 50 years. There's no evidence in that. And the photographic image you're talking about is they've taken photos of the lunar surface from I've forgotten where it is. Gerald can tell you where they took the shots from. I don't think it was from the Hubble, but it was from something or other. But anyway, you can't find anything at all. I've looked at all their arguments in absolute detail, and there's nothing quantifiably there. There's no hard evidence at all. The moon rocks are rubbish. The photos that they reckon they've got of the moon surface show nothing. They're very granularized. I'll tell you what. Jarrah is a very interesting chap to have on the show because he loves going to the moon. He loved the whole idea since he's been a child. He wants to go there. He wants to believe in it. He has just seen the facts for what they are. And, in fact, he would like to, overcome these obstacles and go. But, there is just no evidence at all. If you overcome the Geiger counters being oversaturated going through the radiation belt, and you overcome the shielding issue, then there should be some evidence. and there isn't. If someone shows me...
We're just going to break. You're with Truth News Radio Australia. We're talking about the moon. We're talking about human space travel. Can it be done? Have we been deceived? We'll be right back after this short break. Hi, welcome back. You're with Truth News Radio. And we're continuing our discussion about human space travel and the question about whether indeed human beings have been into outer space or not. Can I just encapsulate what I perceive as two very important wings of the arguments that you're presenting, Damon, because I think it's very important to clear it in your mind. First of all, we're talking about evidence that we've been there. And there's a whole variety of sources of what you might call evidence that humans went to the moon. B, let's call it A. Now, B, the other side is technical scientific problems associated with doing that that we know already exist. In other words, the radiation issue, we know that it exists, and we have scientific papers. We have all kinds of information that you've referred to, Damon, that says we have a serious technical problem here. One side of it is like, well, there's purportedly evidence that we've already done this. B, there is this other side of it that, well, we've got all this evidence that's technical that we can't do it, or we don't yet know how to do it. The question about the evidence as to whether it's already happened or not, there's a variety of different types of evidence. One of them, as you cited before, was the evidence about have we sent animals into space? Well, it doesn't look like there is any evidence, apart from that turtle, that we've sent animals into space. Now, the question about the human missions to Mars, the five Apollo missions, was it five or was it six?
Six.
Sorry. The six Apollo missions, what is the evidence that they really happened? Well, the evidence is the evidence given to us by NASA themselves, the photographs that they took, the video that they beamed back to Earth. It's all their evidence. Is there an external source of evidence? Okay. And what do I mean by that? Is there like a Hubble Space Telescope image of the moon landing sites? Is there an LRO, that's the Lunar Reconnaissance Orbiter, which had the most up-to-date modern cameras, very, very high technology. Is there evidence from the LRO orbiter that
we
went
there? Show me the evidence. We'd love to see it.
Well, there is what they call evidence, and they certainly talked about it a lot in the media, and it was publicized that the LRO had taken beautiful images of the Apollo landing sites. But, of course, if you go to the NASA website and you actually look at those images, all you see is white splodges. There's no detail there at all. You can't see anything. So this question about evidence is very important, because at the moment it looks like the only real evidence that we've got, that we've been there, is the evidence that NASA themselves gave to us, i.e. photographs, video footage, and, of course, you know, the astronauts themselves saying we went there.
Yeah. But the photo and video footage, there's no scientific possibility that's correct, because, as I've mentioned, they cannot get that to work in low Earth orbit without shielding that in water. So there's no way you can take normal Kodak film to somewhere like the moon and take all those photographs in perfect clarity, perfectly focused, not a single blemish. If you have a look at the photos in Fukushima or Chernobyl, you'll see them seriously damaged in far less radiation than we're talking about inside the belts or out in space. So this is a complete impossibility. I believe for the large majority of my life, 95% of my life or more, that we went to the moon. I would love to believe that we did. I'm happy to change my mind. The problem is not many people will change their mind based on the overwhelming information provided. And you cannot get to the moon and back and achieve the same level of absorption as low Earth orbit. That proves to you that the Geiger counters woven into the spacesuits indicate without any shadow of a doubt where they were. The absorptions inside those spacesuits, even though in the 60s and 70s we didn't speak about those things very often or at all, we would not have really been able to put them in context. Now there are 600 plus satellites inside the radiation belts. We know far more about space. We're talking about going to Mars at the moment. Well, I've got a document in front of me by Donald Rapp, why the NASA approach will likely fail to send humans to Mars prior to 2080. Spoke to him again this morning. He wrote an original document called Radiation Effects and Shielding Requirements in Human Missions to the Moon and Mars. There are literally dozens and dozens of professors and scientists who will tell you that it is complete rubbish, and the number one thing to focus on if you want the truth is mathematics and science. And the maths and the science tells you we have not been able to overcome the effects of radiation, which is why all missions outside the Apollo missions, by the way, there was Apollo 7 to 17, check with Jarrah on this, Apollo 11 was the first one, and Apollo 7 was the first time we successfully got to the moon. Apollo 8, we did a flyby, which is the first time we went through the radiation belts. Now, don't forget, in June 1969, 1 month before we went, in July 1969, they sent up some monkeys to the Vellum radiation belts, and they all died. There is just an endless evidence of dead cosmonauts. If you want to go and look at a couple of brothers that set up a radio rig and recorded dead cosmonauts dying in space, not very pretty, but people in severe pain. Dogs, Laika, all sorts of animals died in the Russian experiments. As recently as a few months ago, Russia tried to send animals near the radiation belts and they've died. Only thing that is seems to be able to be impervious to the levels of radiation and X-rays and these secondary radiation particles that go through the radiation belts are reptiles. They're even telling us now on the way to Mars, one day in space with just galactic cosmic radiation, not the sun. So we've got three radiation sources here. We've got the incredibly electrified radiation energy. I shouldn't say call it radiation because trapped energized particles inside the Van Allen radiation belt. We've got, which are completely unpredictable and change on a knife's edge. Two, we've got the galactic cosmic radiation, which is radiation energized particles we're receiving from star systems in our galaxy. And the third one is from our own sun. Now, the sun, we know, throws out minor and major flares. Jarrah would be a good one to talk about this. I'm talk about not going to the moon based on mathematical evidence that excludes the sun and excludes the Van Allen radiation belts. I'm only talking the background galactic cosmic radiation, and we're still out by a factor of 100. Those figures are so insane, it's you can't argue with them, and I'm sure Jarrah will tell you that.
Absolutely. Can I just address this question about the renewed interest in space travel that we're now seeing from so many different directions? Of course, the Chinese are really trying to sort of make their mark, and they've sent their rover to the moon. We've had talk about manned missions now from several different sources. NASA was talking about another mission to the moon. George Bush had said in his presidency that that America would be sending people to the moon again. Obama then came along and said that that was not going to happen, and they said, well, we can do it, but we choose not to. Then, of course, we had this very peculiar Mars One mission publicized a lot, which was to send a bunch of volunteers on a one-way trip to Mars, which would be then all done almost like a Big Brother TV series where we would watch everything they do. I mean, what's going on here with this sudden sort of
well, they want you to believe that we can go into space. It's very, very critical. They didn't do this by accident. So once you mathematically, scientifically know we didn't go, and that is a fact now. Then you then can ask why we didn't, why they decided to do this, because it was a very orchestrated, planned PSYOP, global PSYOP, to program the humanity of the world that we were capable of going into space when clearly we're not. Now, I think that's losing its effect, that mind control programming is nearly 50 years on, and that's starting to dwindle a little bit, and they're measuring that zeitgeist through the internet. So they now come up with saying, well, we're not going to the moon anymore, we're off to Mars. But of course, anybody who investigates going to the Mars, as I said, Donald Rapp, I spoke this morning, has done an enormous amount of investigation, even in up to 2006, will find that's complete rubbish. When you get to Mars, you need to be under 5 meters of dirt, right, to protect yourself from the radiation. It's 6 months to get there, so the radiation dose just to get there will kill you. And we're not talking about the Valon radiation belts, and we're not talking about the unpredictability of the sun. The sun is capable, in an unpredictable fashion, of generating thousands of REM.
The author you cited there before, Donald Rapp, he is mainly focused on intergalactic radiation as the problem that he's trying to address.
No one quotes solar radiation when you go out in space, because the figures are so astronomical and so mind-blowing that even in that 1963 Russian document I spoke about and the 66 NASA document, they indicated that in 110 grams per centimeter squared, that's a 500-ton craft, you would receive 1,000 rem per hour. Okay, that's many millions of times the background radiation of Earth. Now, we're delicate little flowers. We would die instantly. We would die anything near 100, 300 rem. In fact, a radiation worker is 5 rem per year.
Yeah.
Okay. You wear a lead apron to get an X-ray, which is well under 1 rem. Radiation is very dangerous. If you know this, because when they send out 600,000 workers to put the esophagus on Chernobyl, 250,000 of those people who are only out for a few minutes at a time have now had, many of them had their thyroids out and can't work, and they're suffering from various degrees of sickness, as is the Navy ship workers outside Fukushima. I think you know about that as
indeed.
Well.
Indeed, yeah, certainly. There's a The effects of radiation are often minimized and underreported for all kinds of political reasons, because it's not convenient to admit sometimes that these things have occurred. Radiation is a huge problem in so many different regards. There are so many different problems with it. We're just getting to the end of the hour. When we come back for hour two, we're going to have Jarrah White on. Jarrah White, author of the Moon Faker series on YouTube, a very, very popular and important contribution to Apollo skepticism. And Damon will also be with us for the second hour. It's going to be a very interesting discussion. Stay with us. We'll be right back at the beginning of the next hour.